The floor was a pale green and seemed to swim in and out of focus under the hum of the fluorescent lights. On the wall, a basketball hoop hung limply from its backboard. Scattered across the floor, a few dozen patients on low cots. In the far corner, just beneath a burned-out scoreboard, was an old payphone. Becker hoped it worked. As he strode across the floor, he fumbled in his pocket for a coin. He found 75 pesetas in 5 duros coins, change from the taxi, just enough for 2 local calls. He smiled politely to an exiting nurse and made his way to the phone. Scooping up the receiver, Becker dialed directory assistance. 30 seconds later, he had the number for the clinic's main office. Regardless of the country, it seemed there was one universal truth when it came to offices. Nobody could stand the sound of an unanswered phone. It didn't matter how many customers were waiting to be helped, the secretary would always drop what she was doing to pick up the phone. Becker punched the 6-digit exchange. In a moment, he'd have the clinic's office. There would undoubtedly be only one Canadian admitted today with a broken wrist and a concussion. His file would be easy to find. Becker knew the office would be hesitant to give out the man's name and discharge address to a total stranger, but he had a plan. The phone began to ring. Becker guessed 5 rings was all it would take. It took 19. "Clínica de Salud Pública," barked the frantic secretary. Becker spoke in Spanish with a thick Franco-American accent. "This is David Becker. I'm with the Canadian Embassy. One of our citizens was treated by you today. I'd like his information such that the embassy can arrange to pay his fees." "Fine," the woman said. "I'll send it to the embassy on Monday." "Actually," Becker pressed, "it's important I get it immediately." "Impossible," the woman snapped. "We're very busy." Becker sounded as official as possible. "It is an urgent matter. The man had a broken wrist and a head injury. He was treated sometime this morning. His file should be right on top." Becker thickened the accent in his Spanish. Just clear enough to convey his needs. Just confusing enough to be exasperating. People had a way of bending the rules when they were exasperated. Instead of bending the rules, however, the woman cursed self-important North Americans and slammed down the phone. Becker frowned and hung up. Strikeout. The thought of waiting hours in line didn't thrill him. The clock was ticking. The old Canadian could be anywhere by now. Maybe he had decided to go back to Canada. Maybe he would sell the ring. Becker didn't have hours to wait in line. With renewed determination, Becker snatched up the receiver and redialed. He pressed the phone to his ear and leaned back against the wall. It began to ring. Becker gazed out into the room. 1 ring, 2 rings, 3. A sudden surge of adrenaline coursed through his body. Becker wheeled and slammed the receiver back down into its cradle. Then he turned and stared back into the room in stunned silence. There on a cot, directly in front of him, propped up on a pile of old pillows, lay an elderly man with a clean white cast on his right wrist. Chapter 21. The American on Tokugan Numataka's private line sounded anxious. "Mr. Numataka, I only have a moment." "Fine. I trust you have both pass keys." "There will be a small delay," the American answered. "Unacceptable," Numataka hissed. "You said I would have them by the end of today." "There is one loose end." "Is Tancado dead?" "Yes," the voice said. "My man killed Mr. Tancado, but he failed to get the passkey. Tancado gave it away before he died, to a tourist."
"Outrageous!" Numataka bellowed.
"Then how can you promise me exclusive?"
"Relax," the American soothed. "You will have exclusive rights. That is my guarantee. As soon as the missing passkey is found, Digital Fortress will be yours." but the passkey could be copied. Anyone who has seen the key will be eliminated. There was a long silence. Finally, Numataka spoke. Where is the key now? All you need to know is that it will be found. How can you be so certain? Because I am not the only one looking for it. American intelligence has caught wind of the missing key. For obvious reasons, they would like to prevent the release of Digital Fortress. They have sent a man to locate the key. His name is David Becker. How do you know this? That is irrelevant. Numataka paused. And if Mr. Becker locates the key? My man will take it from him. And after that? You needn't be concerned, the American said coldly. When Mr. Becker finds the key, he will be properly rewarded. Chapter 22. David Becker strode over and stared down at the old man asleep on the cot. The man's right wrist was wrapped in a cast. He was between 60 and 70 years old. His snow-white hair was parted neatly to the side, and in the center of his forehead was a deep purple welt that spread down into his right eye. A little bump, he thought, recalling the lieutenant's words. Becker checked the man's fingers. There was no gold ring anywhere. Becker reached down and touched the man's arm. Sir? He shook him lightly. Excuse me, sir? The man didn't move. Becker tried again, a little louder. Sir? The man stirred.
Kelleth.
He slowly opened his eyes and focused on Becker. He scowled at having been disturbed.
Qu'est-ce que vous voulez?
Yes, Becker thought, a French-Canadian. Becker smiled down at him. Do you have a moment? Although Becker's French was perfect, he spoke in what he hoped would be the man's weaker language, English. Convincing a total stranger to hand over a gold ring might be a little tricky. Becker figured he could use any edge he could get. There was a long silence as the man got his bearings.
He surveyed his surroundings and lifted a long finger to smooth his limp, white mustache. Finally, he spoke.
What do you want? His English carried a thin, nasal accent.
Sir, Becker said, overpronouncing his words as if speaking to a deaf person. I need to ask you a few questions. The man glared up at him with a strange look on his face.
Do you have some sort of problem?
Becker frowned. The man's English was impeccable. He immediately lost the condescending tone. I'm sorry to bother you, sir, but were you by any chance at the Plaza de España today? The old man's eyes narrowed.
Are you from the city council?
No, actually, I'm...
Bureau of Tourism?
No, I'm...
Look, I know why you're here.
The old man struggled to sit up.
I'm not going to be intimidated. If I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times. Pierre Clouchard writes the world the way he lives the world. Some of your corporate guidebooks might sweep this under the table for a free night on the town, but the Montreal Times is not for hire. I refuse.
I'm sorry, sir. I don't think you under...
Merde law. I understand perfectly.
He wagged a bony finger at Becker, and his voice echoed through the gymnasium.
You're not the first. They tried the same thing at the Moulin Rouge, Brown's Palace, and the Golfinho in Lagos. But what went to press? The truth. The worst Wellington I have ever eaten. The filthiest tub I have ever seen. And the rockiest beach I have ever walked. My readers expect no less.
Patients on nearby cots began sitting up to see what was going on. Becker looked around nervously for a nurse. The last thing he needed was to get kicked out. Clouchard was raging.
That miserable excuse for a police officer works for your city. He made me get on his motorcycle. Look at me.
He tried to lift his wrist.
Now who's going to write my column?
Sir,
I have never been so uncomfortable in my 43 years of travel. Look at this place. You know my column is syndicated and over...
Sir, Becker held up both hands urgently, signaling truce. I'm not interested in your column. I'm from the Canadian consulate. I'm here to make sure you're okay. Suddenly there was a dead quiet in the gymnasium. The old man looked up from his bed and eyed the intruder suspiciously. Becker ventured on in almost a whisper. I'm here to see if there's anything I can do to help. Like bring you a couple of Valium. After a long pause, the Canadian spoke.
The consulate?
His tone softened considerably. Becker nodded.
So you're not here about my column?
No, sir. It was as if a giant bubble had burst for Pierre Clouchard. He settled slowly back down onto his mound of pillows. He looked heartbroken. I thought you were from the city, trying to get me to... He faded off and then looked up. If it's not about my column, then why are you here? It was a good question, Becker thought, picturing the Smoky Mountains. Just an informal diplomatic courtesy, he lied. The man looked surprised.
A diplomatic courtesy?
Yes, sir. As I'm sure a man of your stature is well aware, the Canadian government works hard to protect its countrymen from the indignities suffered in these, shall we say, less refined countries. Clouchard's thin lips parted in a knowing smile. But, of course, how pleasant. You are a Canadian citizen, aren't you?
Yes, of course. How silly of me. Please forgive me. Someone in my position is often approached with... Well, you understand.
Yes, Mr. Clouchard, I certainly do. The price one pays for celebrity.
Indeed.
Clouchard let out a tragic sigh. He was an unwilling martyr tolerating the masses.
Can you believe this hideous place?
He rolled his eyes at the bizarre surroundings.
It's a mockery. And they've decided to keep me overnight.
Becker looked around.
I know, it's terrible.
I'm sorry it took me so long to get here. Clouchard looked confused.
I wasn't even aware you were coming.
Becker changed the subject. Looks like a nasty bump on your head. Does it hurt?
No, not really. I took a spill this morning. The price one pays for being a good Samaritan. The wrist is the thing that's hurting me. Stupid, Gardia. I mean, really, putting a man of my age on a motorcycle. It's reprehensible.
Is there anything I can get for you? Clouchard thought a moment, enjoying the attention.
Well, actually, he stretched his neck and tilted his head left and right. I could use another pillow, if it's not too much trouble.
Not at all. Becker grabbed a pillow off a nearby cot and helped Clouchard get comfortable. The old man sighed contentedly.
Much better. Thank you.
Pas du tout, Becker replied.
Ah, the man smiled warmly. So you do speak the language of the civilized world.
That's about the extent of it, Becker said sheepishly.
Not a problem, Clouchard declared proudly. My column is syndicated in the U.S. My English is first rate.
So I've heard, Becker smiled. He sat down on the edge of Clouchard's cot. Now, if you don't mind my asking, Mr. Clouchard, why would a man such as yourself come to a place like this? There are far better hospitals in Seville.
Clouchard looked angry. That police officer. He bucked me off his motorcycle and then left me bleeding in the street like a stuck pig. I had to walk over here.
He didn't offer to take you to a better facility?
On that god-awful bike of his? No, thanks.
What exactly happened this morning?
I told it all to the lieutenant.
I've spoken to the officer and...
I hope you reprimanded him, Clouchard interrupted.
Becker nodded. In the severest terms. My office will be following up.
I should hope so.
Monsieur Clouchard, Becker smiled, pulling a pen out of his jacket pocket.